Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Fat Man Little Trail, the podcast where everyone is invited on this journey. My name is Greg, the Fat Man. I am your host. I am the founder of fatmanlittletrail.com, a wonderful website. If you haven't seen it, go check it out. And also go ahead and follow me on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter and at TikTok and everything else that you can think of. And if you want to help me out and support the podcast, if you like what you're hearing, go ahead and like and share it on whatever platform you're seeing me on or hearing me on. I know I'm on about 15 of them now, so go ahead and like and share. If you don't like it, listen to the next one. It might be better. You never know. And finally, if you really want to help out, I have a link in my bio where you can donate a little monthly sum of money to me so that I can make this better and better and maybe even get some intro music. That's what my first guest wants me to get. I know that for sure. I want to get right into the Chewing the Fat segment. And my first guest today is probably one of the smartest people that you will ever meet in your entire life. Because when I started out fatmanlittletrail.com, she was one of the first people to start reading it. And that makes her a genius in my book. Tia Bozier is joining me today. And she writes the website Tia on the Trail. Tia on the Trail focuses on helping beginning hikers, through hikers, day hikers, and campers to get their starts in the outdoors. Tia, thank you so much for joining me today.
I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me. And what a compliment. Now I have to sound really smart.
Well, you're smart already because you've already talked about how brilliant my writing is numerous times. So I'm just going to keep saying that over and over again to make myself feel better and to encourage people to go read my website. But Tia, your stuff, I read your stuff all the time too, and I absolutely love it as well. So now that that is out of the way, we can get down to business. Tia, tell us a little bit about yourself. So you're a big outdoors person now, but when you were growing up, were you a big outdoors person? Were you a big athlete? What was your kind of upbringing in that way?
So I'm from Saskatchewan, Canada, and then growing up, not so much an athlete. Like I swam competitively a little bit, but, you know, I was the kid that got the participation ribbon and not so much, you know, I didn't place ever. But I always liked the outdoors, even though sports weren't for me. So then I wanted a reason to spend more time in the outdoors. And after high school, a few years of university, I still wasn't too sure what to do, but I signed up for this recreation and tourism program. And I ended up getting a diploma from there. And from that, I went to Alberta for a few years and worked in the mountains as a tour guide. And I was so lucky to work in these really cool places, like on a glacier and as a dog sled tour guide. And when you're working in cool places, you're still there after you're done your shift. So that's just the perfect opportunity to go for hikes. And that's kind of what sparked my interest. So I did a lot of hiking in the mountains. And then after a few years of working there, I moved back to Saskatchewan and I still love hiking. So I decided to start documenting it just because I learned so much along the way. I thought it might be helpful for other people and even just to remember it myself.
On behalf of all men and Americans out there, I have to ask, since you're from Canada, do you know Ryan Reynolds?
Well, every Canadian girl's dream. I haven't met him yet, but I heard that he likes hiking. So maybe I'll see him out on the trails one day.
That is a possibility. I have a question for you, though, because you're doing these, being a tour guide in some of these really cool places, did that lead to you meeting a lot of like really cool people? Yeah, I go to Rocky Mountain National Park and you'll see groups from Germany and groups from Japan and China and things like that. Did you get that where you were being a tour guide?
Oh, absolutely. It was the coolest. Every day you're seeing, like, the one place I worked, I would see hundreds of people in a day, all from, you know, all over the world. And when I was doing dog sled tours, you'd have people, you know, one group of people on your sled for an hour or so, you'd be able to talk to them, and just everywhere. You learn so many little things about, you know, other cultures and just other ways of life.
So now you're sneaking in more information here. You did dog sled tours. It wasn't just hiking.
Yeah.
So it's called mushing, right? Or is that, you were exactly. A musher?
Yeah. I was a musher for one winter season.
How did that start? Did they just say jump on?
Well, so I was actually working on a glacier before that, and we were switching into seasons. So switching from summer into the winter season. And I wanted to be a dog sled tour guide so bad. So I went and I applied, and you do a trial day when you're applying. So you go and just, you know, work with the dog, see what it's like, kind of thing, because it is quite a bit of work. And so I did my trial day and I didn't get the job. So I was disappointed. I, you know, got a job somewhere else. And a week later, I got a call from the boss and he said, hey, Somebody just quit. What do you think about being a dog sled tour guide? And, you know, I jumped on that immediately. So spent the season, and it was just incredible. We were working with 180 Huskies and, you know, running around all day long in the cold. Yeah, pretty cool. And then I think 3 or 4 years later, I adopted one. So now I have one at home with me all the time.
That's awesome. So did you get to, like, did you have to like care for the Huskies too, or were you just the tour guide?
We were everything. So sometimes I would even spend nights at the dog kennel. Like the tour guides would take turns spending a night just to make sure everything's okay. So you'd wake up and all the dogs would get fed, you'd clean up. And then we didn't go do tours directly from the site that we worked at. You load all the dogs up into a trailer and then drive them up to the site. So there's about, I want to say 6 to 10 of us running around, you know, unhooking dogs and loading them up. And then you drive up and run tours all day and then come back down and unpack and clean up and feed everybody and repeat the next day.
Wow. That's amazing. Maybe I knew that about you, but this is just driving me into just like, you know, I love dogs. So this just, I have so many questions, but I should move on. When you were out doing these tour guides, do you have like one experience that was kind of, you know, unique to everything else, or one plate, like one tour that you love to give? Like, what was your favorite part of that?
I like the dog sled tours a lot. I also did bus tours on the glacier. So it's hard to pick one experience because there were so many cool places and cool people, but one of the dog sled tours was a half day. So normally it would be about a 2 hour long tour. You take people around, but the half day is you bring them on a longer trail and you make lunch for them and you have a fire. So you just get more time to, you know, hang out with your guests. And at the beginning of this half day trail is this very long hill. And we call it the heart attack hill because you have to run up. The dogs don't pull you up the hill. You run up beside them. So you're running up this hill and, you know, you're exhausted. So usually you stop halfway and turn around and ask your guests if they need a little bit of a break, a little bit of a breather to catch up. So I'm getting pretty tired and I stop my sled and I turn around to my guests behind me. And I said, do you guys want to, you know, take a break for a minute? And he's like, oh no, I run marathons. This is great. So I'm exhausted. I'm like, okay, let's keep going. But they were super nice people and we had a great day.
Those are the people I tend to just push back down the hill. Yeah. I'll be like, well, good luck. Make it up here twice then, pal. Insurance makes us take a break at this point so I can catch my breath, young man.
Exactly.
But that kind of leads into something, you know, you said you were a swimmer, but you weren't like a huge athlete growing up. Now you've got a marathon runner running up a trail next to you. Like, what do you think that you have to be a elite style athlete to enjoy the outdoors?
Absolutely not. And I think that's the best thing about the outdoors and hiking specifically is you can make it whatever you want it to be. You can choose to hike based on what you like and what your abilities are. So even if you're going out for an hour, that's still a hike. If you're going out for a day, that's a hike too. So it's just nice because it's an opportunity for everybody to get out there and be doing the same thing.
And I'm guessing on the tours, you had all sorts of different skill levels and ability levels and things like that were out there.
So. Oh, definitely.
When you started just hiking for joy and for pleasure, then what was, were you more into the day hiking or were you more into the through hiking? You've been living out, you know, on a glacier for all these years. Were you kind of just like, I'm over that and wanted to do day hikes, or what was your style then?
I started when I was working, so I didn't have a lot of extra days to do multiple day hikes. So it was usually driving somewhere after work to go for a quick hike, but I was lucky that I lived there so I could go check out all these cool spots. Then when I kind of moved on and wasn't working there anymore, I would just make a trip out of it to go up there and do a longer hike, or up in northern Saskatchewan, do a multi-day hike. So now instead of, you know, making it an after work activity, it's more of like a planned thing for me. So now I'm doing longer hikes whenever I can.
And it seems like most of your hiking, you're also camping out and you're doing through hiking and things like that. Besides just the, you know, distance and the time that it's going to take, what are some of the big differences that you've found in doing the day hikes, you know, when you lived up there and now trying to stay out and camp and do 2 and 3 day hikes?
I think the biggest difference is the planning that goes into it. Even if it's just a couple of days, even an overnight, it can take you weeks to plan, just because you have to think about everything, your food, you have to know what extra gear you need. So yeah, it's for sure the planning if you need specific permits or camping. So yeah, you just have to put a lot more thought into it than just grabbing your bag and going for a day hike. But that's also kind of the fun of it, because I feel like you can get, you know, you can not master it, but you feel like you're getting better at planning out these trips.
And as somebody who did deal with dogs, I know you've got a husky of your own now, and you hike with your husky a lot. Out here in Colorado, everybody's like starting to hike and they're bringing their dogs out with them, and they love to have their dogs on the trails, and the dogs seem to love it. But do you think that bringing a dog on a overnight trip, do you need to work your dog into that? Or is that something that you can do right away? I'm guessing the dogs love it, but.
Yeah, it's good to build up to it, especially if your dog's not really used to doing longer hikes like that. The first overnight I did was, I think, maybe 2 months after I'd brought my husky home from, you know, working as a sled dog. So she was ready to go and pulling me the whole way. But yeah, just be careful and, you know, keep an eye on your dog's feet, because they can wear out if there's a lot of rock or if you're on a lot of kind of mountainous terrain. And then just see, maybe if, you know, take note of when they get tired and don't push them much farther than that, because you want them to have a good time too. Another thing I've found is some dogs don't really like sleeping in tents. I'm lucky my husky, she'll just, you know, pass out and sleep all night. But my other dog, she'll be just a little bit nervous about every sound, kind of like mm-hmm. I am. So just something to think about if you're, you know, not too sure. Maybe don't hike your dog in for an overnight without knowing if they're okay in a tent or not.
Mm-hmm. I know that if I had a dog, I would be tired a lot quicker than that dog would be tired. But we see it all the time here too, where people don't have their dogs on leashes and then they get attacked by a moose because the dog ran off and then ended up, you know, encountering a moose or a wild animal. And then the animal chases them back to where the owner is and stuff like that. If your dog is sleeping outside of the tent or anything like that, like when you had the other dogs, is it a good idea to keep them in the tent, or can they sleep outside? I'd be worried about the animals at that point.
Yeah. I keep my dogs in the tent for that reason. And I also keep them on leash all the time, because, you know, you want to avoid encounters with wildlife. You don't want to bring them directly to you with a dog. So if I personally prefer to keep my dogs in the tent with me, just so we can make sure that we're all okay. But some tents do have a little bit of a vestibule too, that I'm sure it would be kind of a better still covered spot. Yeah, I like to have them snuggled up with me though, especially on those cold nights.
They're warm. Heck yeah. Speaking of cold though, you're from the word in Canada that I can't speak. You couldn't have been from Quebec or something like that, but you're from Saskatchewan. So what is, I mean, obviously it's Canada, and everything that the Americans know about Canada is that it snows all the time. There's about 400 feet of snow on the ground at any given time. But what is the actual weather up there that you guys are hiking in?
So I try to hike in more of the shoulder seasons and summer seasons. We had a really hot summer this last summer, so I had to delay some of our hikes a little bit because it was just, it would have been bad for me and the dogs to be out there. But I think fall is probably the best hiking weather around here. And then come winter, it's absolutely still possible, but you just have to put more thought into it, bring extra layers. I don't really like to go out of service area in the winter just in case, especially now it's really cold here right now. So I won't be going out for any extended periods of time.
One thing that I love about your website is, you talk about all the different planning that has to go into, you know, hiking in the winter and things like that. You're very open about what you pack on your trips, what you have for your dogs, what kind of food you're bringing, what kind of, you know, gear you have. Is that conscious? Are you trying to just help people along in that way?
Yeah, I think it's so, you see out there so many pack lists, and even with mine too, it's just a little bit overwhelming because you'll see these lists of what people pack, but you don't exactly know what would be right for you. And I think that's kind of what I'm trying to say in those posts that I make, is that go out there and test and see what works best for you. You think about even like the ultralight hiking communities that like to bring kind of the bare minimum. They won't bring any luxury items, or as people like, I like to have a few more luxury items with me and be a little bit more comfortable. So it's all about just taking what you have out there and testing it, maybe making note of what you're using and what you're not using so that you can have a lighter pack next time potentially. And then just, yeah, enjoying it.
And if you're going to listen to anyone, you should probably listen to the tour guide of Ryan Reynolds in Canada, because right? That is important. No, but I know how that is, because when I hike, you know, even when I'm going on a day hike, I've got like a 20-pound pack with me because I'm an idiot. And I like to just pack everything in there and have, you know, everything. And for the website, I have cameras and little tripods and selfie sticks and all the stuff that I hate myself for bringing, but I still do it anyways. But is that kind of why you wanted to start your website? Was more of an education thing to try to help people who are getting started?
Yeah, I was kind of, as I was getting more into hiking, I was learning these little things that was like, I had no idea about that before. So it would be really nice to kind of keep it written down, even to just share with friends and family who might be interested in coming along with me. And there's, yeah, just so many little bits about being in the outdoors, dressing warmly, what kind of food is good to pack that I had no idea. So now it's good just kind of keep it all in one spot and be able to share that with people.
What is the one little thing that you found that you think is like the best tip that everyone should know?
You should enjoy the food that you're bringing with you. I think I see a lot of people that bring those like those prepackaged dehydrated meals, and I've tried them a few times and they're just not for me. So I started dehydrating my own food, which is extra steps for sure. But then I know I'm going to like it. I know I've got the right portion. And also another important thing to do is make sure you pack yourself a chocolate bar for every day out on the trail, because you deserve it.
I agree. Mine is socks. That was the one thing that when I started hiking, I was like, you know, I'm in gym shoes and I'm in a pair of, you know, just regular cotton socks. And then when I found like wool hiking socks, it changed my life forever. And they are the greatest thing. And I can actually walk without, you know, being in pain on a daily basis now, which is amazing. Plus they're warm in the summer, or warm in the winter and cold in the summer, which I've never understood that.
So what's your go-to brand for socks?
I have a couple. So I've done, I was a Darn Tough person. That was my main brand. And then I got some Smart Wool, and then I have, some REI socks. And the newest one that I do is this brand called Fox River.
Oh yeah. And
do you know Fox River?
I've heard, but I've never tried.
So they're out of Wisconsin, and they actually sent me a bunch of pair of socks to test out for them. And, they're really nice. They're a little bit cheaper than the other brands, but they're from Wisconsin, and they're a kind of a wool, like they do wool hats and gloves and things like that. So, I'd never heard of them, and they're not in like the sporting goods stores, but they have an outdoor line, and they're wonderful. And they're usually like a wool blend with like not a nylon, but the thing that makes them stretchy. I forgot.
Like a spandex or a...
Like a spandex, yeah. Yeah. So like a wool spandex blend, which gives them a lot of flexibility, which is good. And they don't fall down. That's the key, is they don't fall down. So you just got a Fox River commercial on the podcast.
Yeah.
Imagine that.
Lucky.
So speaking of your website, I'm new to hiking and I go to TiaOnTheTrail.com. What am I going to find?
Why? So you'll see, you can see a few of the bigger hikes that I've done, and I do a little bit of a breakdown. Just like if you had no idea where to start, you could look at that guide and just have a bit of a clue what you're going to expect and what you should pack and do. I also have a tab for what I usually pack. It's just nice to see kind of a point of reference. And I think you should change out and not bring exactly everything that I'm being, like tailor it to suit yourself. But it's just nice to see, especially I think people living in Saskatchewan and around here might see, oh, she lives here and she packs that. So maybe that'd be a good idea for me to bring it. And then you'll also see a collection of maybe different hiking advice, funny stories here or there, and then a collection of the different hikes I've done.
Well, and especially you talked about what you pack and people should do their own, but if you're a first time hiker, which I think your site is geared towards first time hiker, you want people who aren't hiking every day to come on and kind of see what you're doing, and they need the starting point, because you don't know what you need until you're out there. So it's good to have you know, your pack as an example and be like, oh, okay, well, I didn't need the third pair of socks, or I didn't need, you know, this, but I'm going to bring this instead because that fits me better. So I think it's a great starting point, a great place to kind of jump off for somebody who's getting started on that. I'm running out of questions to you. I think we've hit all of the Canadian questions that I had. Have you ever hiked in the United States?
I've done a little bit of hiking just out of Lake Havasu. And I see you've done some hiking in Arizona, but I don't think quite down that far. But I've seen, because I go there once every few years or so. So I'd like to break out and do a little bit more hiking in that area. But it is such a change because I'm used to, you know, snow and bears. And then you go and you're in the desert and there's snakes there. So that's all new to me.
There's snakes and water becomes a different factor. You know, when you're in the, I'll say in the fall in Canada, because I found that in the winter you get dehydrated just as fast as you do in the summer, and you don't realize it because you don't realize you're sweating in the winter and you've got all these layers on and but the air's dry. But in Arizona, I went there in like the spring and it was 70 degrees, but I was just struggling because of just how dry it was. And Colorado's dry as well. So you brought up bears. I did want to ask that. When you're hiking, when I'm hiking here, there's bears in Colorado, but you don't see them that often. They don't like people. They're black bears that are kind of antisocial. When you hike in Canada, it's legit. You've got things that are trying to kill you up there, don't you?
I'm where I am right now in Saskatchewan, it's not impossible, but fairly uncommon to see a bear, but most of the places that I go hiking, it is quite common. So I'm really on top of it. My thing is avoiding an encounter before it even happens. So if you were to hike with me, I'm making noise the entire time. I'm calling out and clapping, and I've always got my bear spray right there. We're just going to make sure we don't run into anybody.
Is it grizzlies that you have up there, or what kind of
bears? In Saskatchewan here, just black bears. Okay. If you're going into the mountains, that is grizzly territory, and I've been lucky to never run into one. I've seen a few black bears, but they usually just turn and run away. Actually, the only animal that I've ever seen on a trail that's been a little bit aggressive was a deer.
Really?
And it was my sister and I hiking and going along our way, and we're both quite good at calling out. So I remember we were calling out, and I think she did a big shout, and then we heard something rustling in the trees and it crashed down, and it was like shocked all of us because we couldn't see what it was. And I think we surprised it too, but it was so thick that you couldn't really see what it was until his little head poked over, and he stood there for a minute and snorting at us, and he was mad and stomping and angry. And we just continued to be, you know, making noise to identify ourselves. And eventually he turned and ran away, but we were surprised that we almost had quite the confrontation with a deer.
Do you have moose up there?
Yeah, we do. I've been lucky to only see them from a distance.
They are the worst. People like up here, they're like, oh, a moose. I want to go see one. I want to give it a hug. No, they are terrifying animals.
Yeah.
Do you do the bear bells? Is that something that you do?
I am not a believer in bear bells. I've read a few things. Few different studies. And I think there's a book that explains a little bit more, but it just says that a bear bell doesn't make quite enough noise to really alert the animals around you. And then people will have a bit of a false confidence because they think that they're protected by wearing this little bell, when in reality, the bear might not have any clue. So I think that clapping or your voice makes a lot more of a difference, and the bear can more easily identify you versus a kind of a little jingling bell.
There's a joke and the punchline is, how can you tell grizzly scat? And it's the ones with the little bells in it, which I always thought was funny. Luckily I saw one bear, but I was still in my car. They're fast. They're scary, but moose are terrifying. I don't know how I could do in grizzly country though. I mean, we have grizzlies up in like Yellowstone and a little bit further north than me. And that's a thing. So good luck. Keep those in Canada. We'll let you have them. We'll let you have grizzlies and wolverines and all of those angry
all animals the good can stuff.
Stay out there. Yeah. That's why you guys are so nice, because your animals got all your anger up there, I guess.
Oh, there we go. Yeah. The protectors, hey?
Exactly. Okay. So TiaOnTheTrail.com is where to find your website, right?
.ca.
I forgot. Yes. I'm sorry.
No worries.
And then is there anything else you want to say about the the website before we get into the really always exciting buffet rapid fire questions?
I guess just to check it out. I love getting feedback. I love seeing comments from people, and I'm always adding new things. So it'd be nice to see more people there.
And I love the website. Check it out. TheaOnTheTrail.ca is the place to find it. We're going to take a real quick break. And when we come back, we're going to do the rapid fire questions, the hike of the week, and we're going to flip it. And Tia is going to ask the fat man questions. So stick around. Welcome back, everybody. It has come to that time. Tia, are you ready? This is the part where a lot of people get nervous. It is the buffet, the rapid fire questions. Are you ready?
I'm confident. I'm ready.
Okay, here we go. If I had a drum roll, it would start now. Question number one, do you prefer, and I think I know the answer to this one, camping, glamping, or staying in a hotel?
I'm going to have to go with camping for sure.
I figure since half of your website is about that, I would say that's probably a good answer. Would you rather road trip or fly to your destination?
Road trip. Absolutely.
I love the road trips. Number three, and you kind of answered this earlier, but what is your go-to snack on the trail?
So I'll mix it up. One of my favorite go-to snacks is a handful of Goldfish crackers. It will not do much for you nutritionally, but it's a great morale booster.
Morale is more important than nutrition, I think, a lot of the time. You talked about chocolate earlier. Like, the number one answer for that question is the Summit Snickers, where people get to the top of a mountain and they have to eat a Snickers bar.
See, I've done a Summit beer, but never a Summit Snickers. So next time, maybe both.
I think a lot of people drink beer at the summit, but they don't tell me because they're worried that it won't fly on the podcast, but it's all good. Here's a good one, especially because you're more than a day hiker. You take longer trips. So what is the first thing that you eat or drink when you get back? Like, what is that crave meal that you're thinking about the whole time you're out camping?
So there's one thing that I would not think about at all at any other time in the year, except for when I'm out hiking. And it's usually on the last day I'm hiking back. I know we're almost at the vehicle. All I want is a Slurpee from the nearest gas station. So I have to go get like the biggest one I can find.
I love that. Especially if you're hiking in the summer and it's been like 100 degrees out all the time.
Yeah, perfect.
It's kind of like, I don't know if you have Chick-fil-A in Canada, but Chick-fil-A's they're closed on Sundays. And I only ever want Chick-fil-A on Sundays because they're closed and I know I can't have it. So I think I feel your pain there. And the last of the buffet rapid fire questions, if you could be anywhere right now, would you want to be in a forest, on a mountain, or at the beach?
Normally, I think I would say on a mountain, but it is so cold here right now. I think I would want a little bit more protection from a forest.
I thought you were going to go with like, I want to be on Hawaii, a beach in Hawaii or Mexico or something, because it's so cold.
I don't mind sticking around here still. I just don't want to be in the wind.
I understand. My dream is to start a Fat Man Little Beaches website for the winter. Oh, yeah. So I don't have to hike in the winter. I can just go explore beaches.
I love that idea.
A bunch of countries have already banned me because I said I might wear a Speedo. Moving on now. That was the buffet five pack of questions. And you did a wonderful job. Congratulations to you.
Oh, great.
You are free for a second. Although now it's time for hike of the week. This is usually where I talk about one of my favorite hikes that I've ever done, but because you are my guest, it is your honor to tell us the hike of the week that you've picked.
So there's so many that I've loved and enjoyed, but I think I'm going to go with the West Coast Trail. It's probably one of the most well-known hikes in Canada. It's on Vancouver Island and it's about 75 kilometers. I did it, I think, 4 or 5 years ago now with two friends, and it took us 6 days, but it's just the most amazing, breathtaking hike. And it is really busy, but for good reason, because it's that incredible. So you're hiking along and, you know, you look up, you're on the beach and you look out and you see whales, and then you're moving along, you're going up ladders and you're seeing big banana slugs all over. It doesn't even feel like I'm from Saskatchewan, but it doesn't feel like you're in Canada.
So, you know, is that one of those that you need permits to get onto and to camp at different places and stuff?
You don't need a permit for each different spot that you camp, but you need to sign up. They actually do a lottery. I think it's coming up pretty soon, end of January here, for people to get their dates to go. It's very tricky. You've got to be on it first thing in the morning to get your hiking times. Because it is so popular, but it truly is worth it. And the extra planning, it's amazing.
And how long did it take to do the 75 kilometers?
So it's 75 kilometers, but I think they measure it by the beach. So if you're actually tracking it, it goes closer to 100 kilometers,
Oh, wow.
because you're kind of going through the trees and in and out. It took us 6 days, but people, you can do whatever you want. You can do it in five, you can do it in seven, more than that if you need to. And then most of the campsites are along the beach. So it's just the coolest experience.
That's awesome. So with the campsites, is it kind of like, like the Appalachian Trail or something like that, where you have spots that are just dedicated to camp at, and like sometimes you can, there's people there that can get you food and stuff like that, or do you bring it all with you the whole time?
You're supposed to pack all of your food. There's one stop in the middle where there's a little bit of a crab shack because there's cable cars and there's a boat that has to take you across at one point, a ferry. So you can stop for food there, but other than that, you've got what you have. And the campsites are not numbered or anything. You kind of hope that you're there first and you can secure a good spot. But it's very popular, so there's always a lot of people on the trail, which some people might not like too much, but I think it's just a really cool sense of community because everybody will go out and have a campfire together. I also have to say that when I hiked it, I lucked out big time, and I think it rained maybe once or twice briefly for us, where there's people that hike the West Coast Trail that it rains all 7 days that they're out there and they're going through knee-deep mud and up ladders. And so I really lucked out, but I think either way, it's incredible.
That's awesome. That sounds like a wonderful thing. You hear about them in the States here. You hear about the Colorado Trail and the Appalachian Trail and the John Muir Trail and things like that. So that sounds like a wonderful little trip. Man, I need to go to Canada, don't I?
Yeah, you do. There's some good hikes here.
That sounds like it. All right, now the time that you have been waiting for all day, Tia. You get to flip the script and you get to ask the fat man. The tables have turned. It is your turn.
So I want to know, now that we've talked about it a little bit, and I'm sure you've thought about it before, are you interested in multi-day trips or a through hike? Is there anything on your bucket list that you'd love to try?
Yeah, I think that it's something that I would like to say that I'm more interested than I am. I need to have surgery on my shoulder in the next month, and it hurts to get out of a regular bed right now. So I think once I get that fixed, I might have a bigger interest. I am a little bit older than most of the hikers that start out this game who are in their 20s and 30s and stuff like that. I'm an old man. I've got gray in my beard, as you can see. And I, sleeping on the ground is fun, but also sleeping in the bed is nice. So I do think that once I get the shoulder fixed and get more healthy in that regards, I think that I will have a better time trying to camp and do through hiking and things like that. I'm limited on the weight I can carry right now, so I really can't do it. And I'm limited on my pain tolerance.
You need to find a through hike. I think there's one in Europe and I can't remember at all what it is, but where it's a through hike, but you kind of stay in a hotel every single night. So you're still doing the full through hike, but a lot more comfortable than, yeah, sleeping on the floor can be, or sorry, on the ground can be a lot.
Well, and that's what it became for me. Like when I would go out to, I took a trip this year out to Utah to the national parks, but I stayed in a hotel every night. But I think I did 42 hikes in 6 days, but every night I ended up at a hotel. The other thing is with like my website and the blog that I do and stuff, I want to come home and like download all my video and get everything done so the next day I can just start fresh. So right now while I'm not through hiking, I still put out a lot of miles in each day. I just try to get home.
Yeah, absolutely. So then, is there any other country that you'd like to try hiking in, or are you really focused on the states?
No, I think that there's so much to do, especially because I live in Colorado and there's so many hikes to do in Colorado that I still haven't even touched the surface. I lost my map. It's over there somewhere, but I think I'm at 24 of the 63 counties in Colorado. And my goal right now is to hike in all the counties just because there's so much beauty in this state. But I do want to get out to other places. Like Canada sounds like it has some amazing hikes in it. I would love to go and do hikes in like Ireland and like in Europe and some of that stuff. I also really like history. So seeing like kind of those older buildings and here an old building is like, oh, it was built in 1974. And over there, it's like, yeah, this was built in 1400. Like, I think it'd be really cool to hike and kind of explore some of that stuff. But I'm, you know, I only started hiking and getting outdoors like a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. So I'm finding that there's so much that I want to see out here. This year, I went to the Grand Canyon. I went to Arches, Canyonlands, Bryce, Capitol Reef, Rocky Mountain, Petrified Forest. Like, I did as much around here that I could. And we're lucky in the U.S. because each of our national parks are so unique that I think there's enough to see here to get me by until I make it to another country, if that makes sense. But yeah, I would totally want to go see another country. I also have a friend who, he was actually the first guest, I think, on the podcast. And he's down in Sao Paulo, Brazil. And he was telling me some of the trails that are down there that are just absolutely amazing. So yeah, I would definitely, I think it'd be fun to travel a little bit more.
Yeah, it's hard to even think about traveling somewhere else when there's so many amazing places right in your backyard. But yeah, then my last question, I guess, would be, your content is so dynamic. When I go on your website, I see so many different things. Like, you've got your podcast, of course, your blogs, you do food reviews, your Zen kind of relaxing videos. Is there like a favorite type of content for you to create, or do you just enjoy all of it?
Well, first of all, because you just, this is why I called you brilliant when we started, is you talked about how dynamic my website is. And I love that. So thank you. I think my favorite things to create is, it's my thoughts page. I have this thing called Fat Man's Ramblings, and those are my kind of, it's more of my blog. So I do like the hike reviews and the food reviews and the product reviews and stuff. And those are kind of more technical writing. But when I do my blogs, like the screw it, I'm trying, or to pee or not to pee, and some of that stuff, which was just me just out on the trail. And you've been on long hikes, and you know, the stuff that goes through your head, and you know, you're out there for hours and hours and hours, and you just come up with these random things, or at least I come up with these random things. And I hike alone a lot, so I don't have anyone to talk to. So I just kind of make these things up in my head. And those are by far my favorite thing to do, is just to sit down and kind of tell a funny story from the trail. I didn't think that I would like the podcast when I started. But I've been able to talk to some really cool people, and I've had a really good time getting to know, like, you know, Tia, I know you from reading your stuff on your website, but we've never spoken until right now. And it's like that with a lot of the people that I talk to on the podcast, where I see them on Instagram or on their website and get a chance to see them through that lens. But then to actually talk to them and interact with them through the podcast has been really cool as well. But definitely when I can just be more creative, you know, product reviews I take really seriously, and I write very seriously about them, because I'm like, somebody is going to take this pair of shoes and I don't want them to go out and get hurt or something like that. The food reviews are more of, I just want people to go and enjoy the small towns that I get to see and things like that. So it, like, it's just kind of writing to write. Whereas that Fat Man's Ramblings is just me just totally freestyling and having a good time with it. So.
Yeah. And I love that. It's kind of a little bit, you know, the truth behind the Instagram post, or kind of the less glamorous bits about hiking. I like being able to share kind of the humor and the funny little things that happen. So I like the honesty that comes with ramblings.
Well, thank you. And I think that's so much is kind of like fake on the internet. Like, social media is fake. Everybody, they think, you know, they say it's real, but there's, you know, people who go and pose and do all this stuff just to get followers or just to get likes or whatever. So I like to have that other side of like, no, this sucks. Like, this was a really steep hill. I'm tired. Like, this is no fun, you know, and you got to have fun with it. And I, you know, I'm not going to set any land speed records, and I don't want people to think that I did. I want people to know that it's a struggle for me. And one of the coolest things about that is I've had people send me emails and tell me that I've helped motivate them to finish their hiking journey or start their hiking journey. Or they were like, you know, I didn't think that I could do it. And, you know, I'm 50 and I have, you know, my kids just left the house and I haven't hiked in 20 years, but now, because I read your stuff, I'm hiking again, you know? And that makes me feel real good, because the no offense here, I don't know how old you are, but the youngins that are out there that are doing all these Instagrams and the websites and things like that, you guys are doing great content, and it's just not relatable to somebody who's a little bit older, who has a bad knee and a bad back and needs shoulder surgery and all these different things. So I think when somebody sees that perspective, it helps them be like, hey, I can do this too. If he can do it, I can do it. And seriously, if I can do it, anybody can do it. So, you know, it's fun to help people that way.
Oh, for sure. And I think even being able to admit and say, wow, that sucked. I didn't really have a good time at that point is important, because I think it's so often you'll see kind of this is this beautiful thing that I saw, this and that. You don't see kind of the bumps that were along the way. So it's nice to get the honesty and maybe, what is it, like the type two fun, where maybe it's not so great until you're reflecting on it later. Like, oh, I had a good time.
And yeah, that was my most popular blog is Screw It, I'm Trying, which is the stages of denial, but for hiking. And one of them is like, acceptance is basically like, I'm going to be miserable until I'm done. And then I'm going to love every second. When I look back at it, I'm going to love it. And some of the views are beautiful, but to get there is just brutal. But it is what it is. You got to work for it, right?
Exactly. And we keep doing it, so it's good overall.
We keep coming back, yeah, because yeah. It's kind of like a golfer who shoots, you know, 140, but their last hole, they got a par, they got a birdie, and they're like, I love golf. You know, the whole time out there, they're breaking clubs and they're, you know, swearing and yelling and all that. And then they have one good hole and they're like, that's the one I'm going to remember.
Exactly.
So,
for me, it's usually I look back on my pictures. I'm like, oh, that was such a great time. And my feet are blistered and I'm exhausted, but it was great.
Well, and I think that one thing that people should do is they should take a lot of pictures. I used to take pictures just because I was tired. So I would stop and take pictures, and I was embarrassed. So I was like, I'm not tired. I just need to take this picture, you know, but it was really, I was just about to have a heart attack. So I figured I'd take the picture. But like going back and writing a website, and you know this because of your website, is when you go back and look at it from that, through that lens of through the pictures that you took. And some of them you're like, why did I take this picture? And like, oh yeah, there's that bird in the corner or whatever it was. And then you remember what you were thinking when you were doing that hike. And I think that's one thing that has really helped me gain an appreciation for the beauty that I see that I don't think about because there's sweat in my eyes while I'm walking. But when I go back and look at the pictures, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is why I love what I do.
Exactly. It's all worth it. And I often find myself going back to take back those pictures that I didn't think were very important when I took them. But then, you know, weeks or months later, it's really cool to reflect and see that trip.
Absolutely. Is that all you had for the famine? You have open season right now.
Yep. I think that was my last question. Thank you.
It's like you hosted your own podcast there for a minute. Mm-hmm. How did you like it?
Great. Wonderful. Maybe I will.
I think everyone should start a podcast. They're so fun. It's basically just a Zoom meeting with all of your newest friends. It's like pen pals for the 21st century. It's wonderful.
And chit-chatting about things that you like too, which is great.
Exactly. Tia, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
And I'm going to say it right this time. If you want to know more about Tia, check out tiaonthetrail.ca, right?
Perfect.
Do you have any social? I don't think you have social medias. Do you have social medias?
No, not so much. Yeah, just the website.
Just the website's the perfect place to find her. And it's really great stuff. And I absolutely love to read it. So thank you again for being here. And I can't wait to read about your next adventure.
Thank you so much. I can't wait to read yours.
Well, that is all the time that we have on the podcast today. Thank you so much to Tia for joining me. And I hope to see all of you out on the trail again really soon. And until then, happy hiking.